It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, it is a Victory Monday. It is a Reaction Monday. It is a Mad Dog Monday. Okay. It is all of those things. If you're on YouTube and Twitch, you can see the Victory Monday shirt that Tyler has on as he's rocking and rolling. By the way, short week, man. They got to turn the page, baby. They got a game on Thursday at the Jets, who just continue to look pathetic as they lose to the Patriots. And Lord knows we just saw that Patriots team. They end up losing to Jacoby Brissett.
When I came out of the darkness,
they had to stop Jacoby Brissett from scoring a game-winning touchdown, and they could not get it done with Jacoby Brissett and those receivers that we saw a couple of weeks back. So that's who you got next on a short week, though, but I'm sure you probably may see the best. This got to be the last stand for the Jets, the best that the Jets may put out. So a lot to get to there, but we do this every week, 713-572-4610. Those of you on YouTube and Twitch, you can jump in on this. I see some people already. And I am standing corrected on this. As you just said, they didn't give Joe Mixon those yards, that 7-yard loss that was on that fumble where everybody in the stadium whose heart was in their ass by that point when that cat ran that thing all the way back and they finally said it was, he was down by contact. But on that, it was a 7-yard loss because he didn't have control of it. So that fumble does go to C.J. Stroud. So C.J. Stroud did have one turnover technically in this game on that pitch fumble. But what was the grade for Stroud? He was 25 of 37, 285 yards. He threw one touchdown at the end of the half to Tank Dell. No picks and that one fumble. What's your grade? I see somebody coming in, Clint at B+ on the text line. What was your grade for CJ Stroud?
I'm straight out with a B. And here's really? Yeah, here's why.
Let me hear this because I'm about to change my mind.
Well, look, I think there's his ability to do what he didn't do last game, which is stay composed. Stay poised in the situation early in that ball game when he was getting the hell beat out of him. I don't know how many times they ended up hitting him, but it was ugly in the first half. So holding, keeping your composure, keeping your poise there, I think was a big plus. He stood in there and made two or three big time throws in a game where they needed him most. So he did well there, but where my minuses are, the pressure starting to get to him. I can vividly remember two, if not three, big-time misses of throws that we've seen C.J. Stroud hit. And
I know the one on Dalton Schultz on a third down, he missed.
One over to his left that was a wide receiver. I can't remember who it was, who he overthrew. I think it was Xavier Hutchinson maybe. But I know there was two, maybe three, where it's clear the pressure's getting to him. Now, I don't blame him for it, but there's still minuses in the grade on the report card here. There's still a minus there. So when I look at those two things, they really equal each other out for me. They kind of cancel each other out. But then you go the errant pitch with the game in hand at that point.
You thought that pitch was his fault?
Yeah.
When you looked at it?
Yeah. I mean, look, here's the deal. It was Bobby's fault. To be honest with you, like, again, this is – and this may be a bit of a stretch, but – I'll go ahead and say it. Like, that's a situation where the game's at as a whole, where when that play comes in, at some point C.J. Stroud's going to go, we're not pitching the ball.
What's wrong with that play? Because that's how
pitching
they
it. There's
that,
no.
I mean, that's how they ended the game. They ended the game against the Colts the last time with.
Right. I'm not saying you're not going to fumble it every time you pitch it, but there's. You're pitching it into, and if I remember correctly, you're asking a wide receiver or a tight end to block an edge rusher who ends up, I think, making the play. And so the whole thing is just a CF. It's not, you're running the ball really effectively downhill, inside, hand the football off inside, don't pitch it, don't, because what can happen, it's not what happens, it may happen 10 times, and And nine of the first nine times, it works like a charm. It's a touchdown. You're still pitching the football in a situation in a football game where it makes no sense to take that risk. Whatever the reward is at the end of that play is not worth the risk of an errant toss or a running back not catching it or a defensive end getting in the mix if it's bobbled at all the way that we saw it. There's just the reward is not worth the risk whatsoever, especially when you've been chopping inside. Turn around and hand it off to him and let's keep this thing moving. I think at some point in time, to me, I'd like to see CJ Stroud say, "No, we're gonna run it. Even if you want to run outside zone, okay, run outside zone. Let's hand it to him. Let's not run toss zone when in that situation, late in the ball game, going in. Let's not. The only thing you could do there is turn the football over to not ultimately win the ball game, and you did it. You damn near gave
there over the execution.
Yeah, the whole thing. I just don't like it, and because that issue there, I'm going to give him a B.
So I'll have to look at the toss again. I guess maybe I didn't. I guess I maybe didn't really look and see, you know, how, you know, who that was on or where the toss was. Because for me, Tyler and Clint, I came in, I was sitting there at an A-.
Okay.
With him, with that. Some of the throws, I think the Colts tricked him a bit when he got out of that 3rd-and-2 run and threw the screen. I think they tricked him at the line of scrimmage a little bit, which will happen. So maybe I moved down to B plus, but I came in with an A-, but maybe B plus because, to me, I thought it was night and day, kind of where you're saying how he handled the pressure. And I thought he was absolutely fantastic when it came to that, not really turning the ball over in terms of interceptions and putting it, maybe he put it in harm's way a couple of times, but not really.
Yeah.
And I was impressed that as you said, he didn't lose his cool. I heard you talking about that on the post game as well, and that he still made plays. Last week it was 86 yards passing off of the pressure. This week he was flirting with 300 yards. Like the throw to Mechie at the end when he
best
got out.
Best of the game, to my opinion.
Throw to Mechie, him finding Diggs down the sideline, not getting frazzled there at the end where they were going quick, and the Colts were more confused, came up with a big play there. I thought the touchdown throw was a great throw to Tank Dell. He was under pressure on that one. So I think, and this is what it's going to have to be. Let's just be honest. You know about this, Clint, but if we look around the league, like, this is Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow didn't have and hasn't had great offensive line play. He has had to figure out and deal with pressure, right? Josh Allen at times has not had great offensive line play. He's had to deal with it with, you know, pressure. Now, Josh and Lamar, they're a little different because their ability to scare you in the run changes how people kind of defend and rush you. But I like Mahomes hasn't had good tackles for years. And you know, they're able to find ways to be consistent like CJ, like to play the way CJ did Sunday. Though some of those guys have found ways to be consistent with that. Matt Stafford, I'd throw into that too. So that's going to be big to see if he can continue to do that. But I give him a lot of credit. I was really, really impressed how he handled the pressure and handled that coming in constantly and still made big-time plays in that game.
I think that's – I mean, I could be fair with that. There's – you know, the misses and then the toss, which by the way I'm watching it is the toss is not ideal, but blocking
it was a little up on the shoulder.
Yeah, it was a little behind and on the shoulder, but really the problem is you're blocking Robert Woods is blocking that defensive end. And that defensive end shoots upfield and just gets in the way of the pitch. But you know, again, that's a play that I don't know what the hell Bobby's thinking calling this play, even now looking at it, watching it again. I mean, it's a cluster in the backfield because you got Stover in motion doing a yo-yo motion going back. You got Woods trying to block a defensive end with that's set up hard inside of him. It just none of it makes sense. I mean, why you would call that play? But it's just again, for me, there's gonna come a day when CJ Stroud is gonna be like, nah, And this is exactly why. Because this can happen. It may not happen but once in 3-4 years, but this can happen. Whereas you turn around and just hand that thing off to him, let Stover kick that defensive end out, and you may have something, you may not. You kick a field goal. It's actually only second and goal, so you have another play. I hate the play call. I hate the execution. And I'll be honest with you, I expect CJ at some point to get the hell out of that before it ever happens.
Yeah, I hear you. That's the next – because we do know that he does have the ability to change plays, because he did. He did in the game. So, with you on that, some people texted in, Stroud A, Mixon A. I'll give him a B. Someone said B is generous for Stroud's performance.
I obviously think B is fair.
Yeah, I'm not going to read the rest of what this person said because I believe they're just trolling. It involves bite the bullet of drafting Quinn or Milrow in the text.
Oh, wow.
How we get there, Tyler?
Gross.
How we get there? I was impressed.
Those guys, the timing of that text is very interesting.
Yeah.
Both of those guys' draft stock is plummeting in the last couple weeks.
Which end was he looking
but no,
from?
But yeah, CJ, I was really impressed in how he handled that thing coming up. All right, man, we were talking about him a little bit today, Clint, earlier, but the other side, it's hard. I mean, hell, he deserves an A++++ compared to what his counterpart did in this game for the Colts. We've seen this a little bit, and yes, it is early, and as you have mentioned this before he came in, that you know, he hadn't played a lot of football, Anthony Richardson. You think he's ever going to figure this out?
Not at the rate he's going. Not at the rate he's going, no. He's going backwards, Ryan. I mean, this is it is a frustrating watch. And it's not, to me, I know a lot of people think, oh, you're always blaming the coaches. Like clearly the player is not developing and progressing in a direction that you want him to, right? But when you look at what they're doing offensively, it just doesn't make any sense. Had they come out and said, after he got injured last year, had they come out and said, look, we're just not going to run him the way that we were running him in the regular season in an effort to protect him. That would make sense. What they're doing now is asking him to win from the pocket, even though I would argue they're not giving it to Jonathan Taylor enough, even if that were the case. The flip side of that
I thought Shane Steichen was horrible.
Awful. Awful. The flip side of that is they came out and said, oh, no, we're not shying away from running Anthony Richardson. And what they've done since then, at least that I've watched, is shy away from running Anthony Richardson, asking him to ultimately play the way C.J. Stroud plays, and it's not going to work for him. Not right now.
And then yesterday, to start the game, they came out and said, nah, man.
Yeah.
We're going. Their first 11 plays, they threw it 9 times.
Well, again, like if Joe Flacco's in the game, and I don't know what they did with Flacco, but if Flacco's in the game and he's part of that game plan, I got to believe Joe says, nah, we're going to ride Jonathan Taylor. We're going to hand this thing to Taylor as much as we can. Right? I mean, I don't understand. I'll be completely honest with you. I don't know which offense was worse in terms of the plan and the approach.
Especially
yesterday.
Really. Yeah.
The offensive plan and approach and play calling for both Indianapolis and the Houston Texans yesterday was, in my opinion, atrocious.
Well, the Texans, especially when Kenyon Green re-entered the game. And then, when he re-entered the game, I think they finished out the half with 15 plays and 10 were passes.
Yeah. I'm going to say it again in 2 seconds. They start the game, after what we watched last week, they start the game, 12 of the first 16 plays were passes. At some point, Kenyon Green gets benched. They put Patterson in. It goes one series. They score. Insert Kenyon Green back in the game. And what they do?
And then they finish it out. They're the last 15 plays of the half, 10 were passes.
And that would be one thing if this were the previous run game that we've seen the Texans. You got a guy out there that's eating. You got a guy out there that's the best player on your offense. Instead of turning around.
And this does not include some sort of a long 2-minute drive. Because you remember they got the ball at the 10 and threw one pass to Tank.
It was very obvious early on that you were going to struggle protecting again. It was obvious because of the play calling, which I don't know why. Like, there is a false sense of security. There is a what am I looking for, Ron? Like, there is a, you think you're a lot better than you are. Like, at some point, you got to look at the tape and go, all right, we are just not a good pass-protecting football team. And to me, I don't know why you need to play more games and generate more film of bad protection to realize that. Like, you, that the Green Bay game was blatantly obvious, along with the previous games in the season. To come out and throw the football 12, take the football when you, after you win the flip. Is that what you said happened?
Mm-hmm.
Win the flip, take the football, and then throw it 12 of the first 16 times, and it's so bad that you've got to bench your left guard. That's how bad your pass protection is. Like that, like clearly you think you're better than you really are, and you just don't want to fess up to, hey man, we're just not very good in that. Let's turn around and feed this monster we got number 28 in the backfield. How about that? Which they ultimately get done, and he eats and he scores touchdowns, and that's fine. I just, at some point, they've got to start owning this fact, the fact of who they are.
Yeah, and it was crazy. The crazy thing about Richardson, though, these jokers, he makes just enough plays that they're always in these games.
Yeah.
It's crazy, and his presence creates so many opportunities in the game. He just flat blew Alec Pierce deep in the middle of the field twice. He got behind last year twice, just completely. He had Pittman down the field once and completely threw it way behind him. It's and they're still in these games. Every one of their games, Clint, have been one possession. Every one of them.
Yeah, can we ban that phrase from, and I know it may be accurate in that sense, but can we ban that phrase from the show?
Like 3 points.
I looked up there a while ago, and one of these sports talk shows is talking about, single score games. Like, obviously, when a team gets a two score lead and there's like 4 minutes left, they're A-okay with you scoring and making it a one score
game. Chiefs Raiders yesterday.
I think that's the game that they were talking
27-13
about. 27-13. They don't give a damn. The Chiefs don't care if you make it a one score game. More. Just don't do it in one play. Right? This one score game thing is just like, golly, I'm exhausted with it, man.
Coming up, our Man Eye Institute players of the game, and there are several options. We'll let you know those coming up next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Shout out to our good friends as we will get our Man Eye Institute players of the game. But real quick, guys. Brett McMurphy, Colorado wide receiver cornerback Travis Hunter becomes the first player in Big 12 history to win the league's offense and defensive player of the week award.
I think it's safe to say the Heisman's a bit locked up.
It's a lot.
You think it's a lot?
Absolutely.
Oh, I don't think
it should be. It should be without a doubt. We've never seen anybody in the sport do what he's doing.
Okay, I don't. We'll see. That kid in Miami.
Yeah, I mean, no, don't get me wrong. It's great. But unfortunately, he come along and had a great year at the same time that we got a guy doing.
Have they won enough? They won enough games. I think they're bowl eligible now.
I think they already have.
Yeah,
like I think it's come on, man.
And he's missed some time too.
He missed a game or two, but it's still. I mean, he's the number of snaps he's going to average per game when it's over.
153 yards receiving and 2 touchdowns. Did he get a pick in the game? I think he did.
It's unbelievable, man.
He probably played 130 snaps.
I mean, it's unbelievable what the kid's doing, man.
He won offensive and defensive player of the week.
Has that ever been done?
Not in the Big 12. I don't know.
Has it ever been done anywhere?
I wonder if Charles pulled it off in the Big 10. Did he ever pull that off?
I mean, that would have to be a monster one play on offense. He didn't play enough on offense to put the numbers up he's putting up.
Yeah, that's insane. All right, let's hit it. Our Man Eye Institute players of the game. We do it every week. Who are our players of the game? Clint, I'll go first. This guy here has taken a lot of bullets. Some deserve, some, I don't know how fair it is. I got to give mine to Eric Murray. They tried Eric Murray. Like, clearly, they were game planning, clearly trying to get Eric Murray in coverage. It didn't matter with receivers, with tight ends, whatever. They were trying to get him. and it was early. And like the first scripted plays, it seemed like it was one-on-ones, at least three or four of them. And he made plays by himself in coverage. He knocked the ball down, had multiple pass breakups. I thought he played a really, really good game. And there's something, boy, when you could tell, hey, man, they're trying to pick on me. Like, they've come with a game plan, and he did not allow any big plays there. So, Eric Murray, I thought he was fantastic. Congratulations to him. He played his tail off, and they tried his ass, and he was there for the challenge. So, shout out to Eric Murray. I'll give you mine.
Yeah, look, he deserves every bit of it, Ron. You're right, man. Eric Murray was a big, especially a guy that's been picked on all year long, a guy that we've all, I know I speak for myself, I'm concerned when he's caught up in coverage. I'm concerned that the opponent is going to get him matched up on somebody that he shouldn't be covering. And boy, he went out there yesterday and made me look like a fool. That's for damn sure. I got to go with Will Anderson, boys. I have not seen the coach's tape has not dropped yet.
Your Mad Dog pick.
Yeah. I mean, look, about a month or so ago, Ron. I think it was when you were out. We had a couple of segments over a 2 or 3 day span where I just had a point where, look, you paid Danico Autry a boatload of money. Will Anderson, you've been talking about how great he is since you drafted him number 3 overall, and he had a good year last year. Obviously, won Defensive Player of the Year. I mean, Rookie of the Year. I get it, but. I need to watch Texans football and watch the defense in particular. And I need to see T.J. Watt, Aiden Hutchinson. Like, I need to see some of that level play.
We said, like, the play on the field wasn't matching his intangibles that they...
Just hadn't caught up yet. And now, look, I do realize, and before everybody, all you sensitive sunbucks out there start getting in on a text line, I'm talking about going from great to elite, like going from a top 20 to a top 5 type. And I'm going to be honest with you, I ain't seen enough of it to put him in the same breath with those guys, but I'm damn sure starting to watch about 2-3 games in a row now where he damn sure jumps off the screen like Aiden Hutchinson was when he was healthy. He damn sure jumps off the screen like T.J. Watt does. He damn sure jumps off the screen like Bosa does. I mean, I don't know if he can do it game in, game out the way those guys do. Like, it's a foregone conclusion. But
fun fact for you, I can't remember what number of games this is. Right now, off the top of my head, I should have made a note of it. But I heard a fun fact that through Will Anderson Jr.'s first whatever amount of career NFL games that he's at right now,
yep,
he is tied with J.J. Watt for number of sacks.
He wasn't going off at first. Like,
He's at 7.5 right now, which was what he had all last year in 2023.
Gotcha.
He's on pace for over 15 or 16 sacks, and there's no reason to think that he's going to slow down. And I don't know what the number looks like, Tyler, but if you take – because Sean Pendergast said – like, he had one sack up until like week 9 last year, and then he just started killing it.
So, that's right, yeah.
I mean, he literally at this time a year ago had 1 or 1.5 sacks or whatever it was, and then just went off. So, Will Anderson is on his way, both from a statistics standpoint as well as turn the tape on standpoint, to be in some extremely elite company.
Like, listen, I like what Azeez Alshire has done. He's missed some games. By the way, an update on him coming up here in just a bit. But Will Anderson has by far been this team's best defensive player. And this has been a team that, when we look at it, the Texans, they have been sitting around 20, 23 points, 24 points. Mm-hmm. Like, that's what they've been more led by their defense and running game. And especially when they play better opponents. And he has flat out been the best defensive player they have on this team.
Is Slovak losing it?
No, he's not. Who is he may be a little bit. Who is
I got you.
I just can't believe he called that many pass plays after Kenyon Green went out. That one caught me off guard. But
Real quick, my player of the game from the victory for the Texans, going with Joe Mixon, 25 carries, 102 yards rushing, and the touchdown. And another fun fact for you as we wrap things up on our Man Ian's two players of the game. This is the only NFL player now, Joe Mixon, this season with 3 consecutive games of 100 yards on the ground. Only guy.
There you go. So Joe Mixon continues rolling there as well. Great touchdown run. That is Eric Murray for me, Will Anderson Jr. for Clint, and Joe Mixon for Tyler. Those are our Man Eye Institute players of the game. Man Eye Institute, see life better. All right, coming up, as we said, the Texans, hey, they got to get going. So the first injury report is already out, as it is game week. It's time to go. They play on Thursday on the road in New York. We'll let you know what the initial injury report is showing right now. And we talked a little bit at the beginning of the show. I think it's time to start taking it serious that not only is A&M SEC, potential SEC champs, they're in the conversation for that big time. They are potentially right there for a college football playoff spot. We'll discuss that coming up now.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
All right, with it being a short week, a lot moves up, and a lot moves up, and we will, like tomorrow, will feel like a heavy practice day, and I'm really curious now with this, with how the week goes. Maybe tomorrow, we'll have to see, Tyler, when we hear from D'Amico again, when we hear from CJ. We normally hear from them on Wednesdays. We'll see. That's something we'll have to keep an eye on. I wonder if that will be tomorrow, since they play on Thursday.
It will be
tomorrow. So we will hear from CJ and D'Amico. Normally we would hear from them on Wednesday. It will be tomorrow because they got
to
travel.
I imagine they'll be flying on Wednesday.
They'll be traveling on Wednesday to get ready to play the New York Jets. And also with that, the injury report. Now, as Tyler said to me prior to us coming back on the air, this is this injury report they have to put out because the game is Thursday. They did not practice, but this is what the practice designations would have been had they practiced today. And so we'll see what it looks like tomorrow, if it's similar to this when they actually do. But Azeez Al-Shaair, knee, did not practice. He has not played the past 2 weeks. Would not have practiced today. Stephon Diggs with that knee. Don't have very much more info with that even. D'Amico said he's still being evaluated. He would not have practiced today. No surprise there. Jarrett Patterson, who has the concussion, it'd be shocking if he found a way to play in the game on Thursday or be ready to, but he did not practice and would not have practiced. Damian Pierce, who had the hamstring earlier, now has a groin. He would not have practiced today. And Jimmy Ward, who has missed the last 3 games with a groin, would not have practiced today. Henry Toa, who's missed the last 2 with concussion, would have been a full participant today. Kamari Laster, who came back with the shoulder, he would have been a full participant as well. Looks like Kalen Bullock has a bit of a shoulder issue and would have been limited. So that is what things look like here on a Monday going into this short week against the Jets. Concerns there, Al-Shaair, Diggs, Jimmy Ward, and Jarrett Patterson with Damian Pierce as well. So those are the ones to watch to see, and hopefully we hear and learn more about what's going on with Stephon Diggs and that knee. He did not return, but there are some guys, important guys on that list that you would need to go face the Jets coming up on Thursday.
Yeah, get Henry Toa being full, or at least would have been full had they practiced. That's a big step in the right direction. I mean, that's a big plus. Kamari beat my face mask after I get a good tackle. Lassiter, him being full and having gotten through a game nickname and not hurt himself. Long nickname, but very fitting, very fitting. You know, that's big. So you got a couple of guys right there that are trending in the right direction, which are I mean, look, you've got to get Henry Toa back. I mean, the depth linebackers have played well, but at some point, you know, those guys are big on special teams, and you need those guys there. You need some depth
they
to be able to
the
roll
need
through.
To bring in Devin White, and he played a lot.
He played a lot. So, that's big. Kamari Lassiter and Henry Toa. I think the non-contact injury to Stephon Diggs, I think it's going to be bad news when it does come around.
You think so?
Yes.
He walked off?
Yeah.
I know he walked off, and I know that not always. I'll never forget Darrell Revis walked off just fine. Like, oh, maybe it's not as bad. And he tore his ACLs, what they said the next day.
Yeah,
he walked off, but you think it's going to be significant?
Though. Yes, indeed. Like, I mean, see, you got to think of the kind of guy he is. I mean, you got. There's got to be something pretty bad for him to agree to be like, all right, yeah, I can't go back in the game. Like, take me to the locker room.
Yeah, he walked right to the locker room.
Yeah, I mean, if it weren't something that was serious, he strikes me as a guy that would have been, at the very least, would have thrown a fit because they took his helmet from him. So, yeah, I don't think the non-contact, the fact that he willingly went to the locker room, never returned, yeah, I don't think it's good with Diggs, man.
Yeah, I hope not with that. We'll see what happens. This is a big year for him and was a big move for the Texans. But hopefully we'll find out about that again if you're just jumping in. And D'Amico was on In the Loop earlier today, and what he said about that was not much, just said he is still being evaluated. Didn't give anything past that. All right, it is a reaction Monday, but not just in the NFL and with the Texans. It's a reaction Monday to Saturday. And look, I think we knew that there was going to be a team in Texas that was going to be talked about as a potential chance to win the SEC championship, to have a team potentially be right up there as one of the favorites to potentially win a national championship in this new 12-team format. Texas is still in the running for all of that to happen. But Texas A&M is in a better spot right now for those things to happen. And
ooh, that sounds good.
I think we've officially, and maybe you two have done it prior to this, but to me, I think we're officially at the point where we got to take A&M serious as potential SEC champions and potential college football, have a college football playoff spot right now. 7-1, their only loss is to top 10 Notre Dame at home, and it was a tight one. They just got their second win against a top 25 team, including Saturday against number 8 LSU. They beat 38-23. You talked about your one-score games. That wasn't a one-score game. They got after them. What was it? Outscored them 17-3 in the fourth quarter. And to me, Clint, even including the final game of the regular season at home, it wouldn't be surprising if A&M was favored in the rest of their four games that they have left. And then they got Auburn in there. They got a couple of
South Carolina. Can't sleep on them.
South Carolina, Auburn, and then another cupcake. And then they have Texas. I think they should be favored in all of those games, Clint. And I think you got to start taking it serious. 7-1 and how they're playing. This looks like a team that might eclipse a lot of the dreams that guys like Tyler have.
Let's go. Let's go.
First time since Johnny Manziel was on the field that I felt like A&M is a true contender. Mm. There's been a lot of false hope, and if you watch that team, they were never as physical as everybody hoped they would be. They were never as talented as everybody thought they would be. I'm just about on the field, clearly with stars and the recruiting, they always were. But you watch that football game, and the way that they dominated LSU, particularly in the second half, it was bully ball. It was in the trenches. It was, they completely overwhelmed everybody in an LSU polo or in an LSU uniform.
Aggie ring, baby.
That defense was suffocating. You look at the turnovers, one might say, oh, well, Nussmeier turned it over and just gave a bunch. No. No, they went out there and took the ball. They were big-time defensive plays. On top of that, Nussmeier was under pressure the entire time. When you look at how that defense, from the turnover that Nussmeier had, the one that I'd say is probably inexcusable, more of a bad decision, the first one, from that point moving forward, the entire LSU program was overwhelmed with Kyle Field and the Aggies. It's the first time that I've watched that football team and said, they can be. They can get on the field with anybody in the country, and they got a chance of winning.
How many teams in the SEC? Because Tyler can't answer this, not fairly, not without a little bit of extra juice behind. How many teams in the SEC right now have you seen that's better than A&M?
That I would confidently say is better.
Is it just Georgia?
Oh man, that's
or Texas?
No,
too?
look, I think. I would probably ride with Georgia and Texas right this second. And the only reason I say that is because I don't know what A&M's going to do with their quarterback situation.
Yeah.
That's the thing for me is that's a
– They playing them both?
A bit. Did you see what happened?
No, I'm sorry. Are they going to play them both?
I don't know how you don't ride the kid. Was it Reed?
Yeah, he had three touchdowns.
Yep. Marcel.
Yeah, but Ron, if you look at, I mean, the he play. I said this before. Like I'd have never benched him. I mean, I liked what Connor Wegman did the first game he came back. It was nice. But I like to me when you watch the kid play. He's moving fast and he doesn't have a ton of experience, so he's not extremely polished from the pocket, but you watch him, he's never overwhelmed. You know what I mean? And is from a pocket passer standpoint, does he got a little bit of work to do? Sure. But boy, the way
Connor does too.
But yeah, Connor does too, clearly. But the way that he fits Colin Klein's offense, the commentators were talking about it in the game. It's just he is a great fit, and I just think they're much more dangerous with him in the game. And he's going to get better every time he plays. And if he starts from here on out, he's got a little bit of wiggle room to make some mistakes. And this football team is good enough to win all the way out to Texas. And you hope that at that moment, now he's developed and he's matured and he's playing his best ball, and you got a shot. I just don't know what they're going to do with their quarterback room. That's the only reason that I say that from a team perspective, I think they're as good as anybody in the SEC, including Georgia.
Yeah, from a team.
From a team perspective, I think they're as good as anybody out there. Yeah. Yep. It's at one position.
Text line coming to Connor Wegman is still the best option, according to Ocho. Reed gives them the best chance to win out. Someone else on the text line.
Well, here's the problem with that, Ron, is I don't doubt that Wegman would win a quarterback competition, but the truth of the matter is, if you're going to beat Texas, if you're going to beat Georgia, because you're going to play them in an SEC championship potentially, if you're going to win a national championship, your quarterback's going to have to deal with pressure. And Wegman's been under pressure big time twice this year. The two times that I saw him, and it wasn't pretty. The first game he came back, man, he was protected nice. It was easy, boom, 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 and it's pretty now.
Was that Missouri?
Yes, that was by far Wegman's best performance of this year. And Clint's saying is right. I mean, I think it's clear cut, far and away, that Connor Wegman is, I mean, light years better as far as a passer right now. Like, maybe I'm exaggerating, maybe I'm inflating that, but to me, what I've seen, Wegman is way, 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 way more developed as a passer. But when you have a situation like Saturday night's game against LSU and Wegman was running for his life looking like C.J. Stroud out there, then you got to pivot, and Elko thankfully did so, got the guy in there who can use his feet.
What a ballsy call, Tyler. He knew it, and he went straight to it. He didn't care. But here's the other thing.
Connor doesn't seem to meet the moment to me. That kid, he may not be as developed as a passer right now, but Reed seems to be into.
I'm going to tell you what he does. He is a more. This is crazy to think this, but he is a more natural quarterback. Like his stroke, the way he strokes the ball, his arm action is better than Connor Wegman's. His movement in the pocket in terms of dealing with chaos is better than Connor Wegman. The difference is Connor Wegman, and I know he ran around in high school and stuff, but he has learned how and has experience and done a lot of winning from the pocket. First and foremost, don't hit the eject button. Reed's always had the ability to hit the eject button, and it's always been about his feet and his arm. That's going to catch up at some point in a good way. It's going to catch up. Reed's arm action and his movement in the pocket is actually better than what I'm watching on games. I don't know about practice and all that, but on games, it's actually better. So, I would go with Reed, and I would ride it, and hopefully by Texas it's he's locked and loaded.
Yeah, someone text in, don't stop sleeping on Tennessee. All right.
When do they got Tennessee?
They don't play Tennessee.
I got Tennessee as a potential college football playoff team too now.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, that's about four SEC teams.
Four or five. I was about to say.
Come on, Doc. It's fluid. It's a fluid situation. I got new evidence, as you like to say, Ronald. I got new evidence. Hey, look, the offense for the Texans was I said it earlier. I think it's atrocious. I think there's real problems, and I'm not buying into how easy it is to fix that. Nick and D'Amico and Bobby Slowick keep talking about, obviously, with what we watched Sunday. But I'm gonna tell you, that defense, y'all, that defense, it's got a real chance, y'all. Injuries, cover defender issues, be damned. Are you buying that this is one of the top defenses in the NFL? Schedule's fixing to get tough. Are you buying that the D'Amico Ryans defense at this point in time, the stats will tell you so, that the defense is one of the best in the NFL? We'll cuss and discuss next right here on Sports Radio 610.